Welcome to the podcast. My name is Jamie Knight, and I'm a realtor with Real Broker right here in Cajun Country, Lafayette, Louisiana. The goal of this podcast is to provide massive value by bringing insider access to our area's top agents and find out how they've been able to achieve massive success in their business. My hope is that you take away a few things from their experiences to grow your own business. My guest today is a good friend and fellow real agent, Cody Musgrove. Cody has been on the podcast once before, and we called that one, I Don't Love This. Welcome to the podcast, Cody.
Hey, buddy. It's good to be back. Always love seeing you.
Yeah, dude. That was fun. That was fun, man. So we're expanding a little bit on the I Don't Really Love This, and we're doing a follow-up to it because it was so well-received, and people have given us a lot of feedback on that. So I guess give us a quick little recap in case they didn't hear the previous episode.
Yeah, so I think the title threw a lot of people for a loop, which that was done on purpose. I think I wanted it to everybody be like, wait a minute, what is this guy? Like, what's his deal? And we just really talked about, like, you know, having a work-life balance and, you know, if having other things maybe that you might be interested in and exploring those things. And for me, it's, you know, my career is to further these other things that I love doing. I love hanging out with my son. I play sports. I love playing music. So I have all these other things that, that I really do love. And you know, for me, work is, more of a, it's a means to kind of those things. But you know, it shouldn't be misconstrued as me like not liking what I do. I do like it, right. But you know, I have other things that I just straight up like better. And that's just me being honest. So, you know, it's, I had some other agents tell me, like, I had a couple of them. They were like, man, bro, you were speaking to me on that thing.
Speaking
like,
my language
right there. Speaking my language. Cause you know, I think a lot of us are like that. We have, you know, other hobbies. We like sports and we like, you know, all kinds of other things, and we like to go on trips and we like to hang out with our families and stuff like that. So, you know, kind of the point of it was, if you haven't listened to it, if you just listened to me for the first time, was like, you know, don't let like work consume you, you know, explore these other things and be well-rounded and be balanced. And, you know, I can't speak to anybody else, but you know, that's what makes me happy and intrinsically satisfied, is to stay well-rounded and, you know, take a break every once in a while. You know, if you're slow, you know, keep working, but if you're slow, like, take advantage of it to do some other things that you enjoy, because there are going to be times where you're not slow and you don't have time to do the things that you love. So, you know, it's important to strike that balance. And that's, I think we got the point across pretty good, but I love the title because I had a lot of agents come up to be like, what are you talking about? You know, I could see where someone would be like, oh God, I got to listen to this. Cause yeah, you know, what's this guy going to say?
This guy doesn't even like it. Yeah. Yeah, no, that was fun. So, just so we can kind of start, I know you have a background in new construction, and you're, I guess, backstory is that you have a lot of experience in family business with new construction. So yeah, Let's start off by talking about that, because, you know, a lot of realtors might just, you know, sell houses and maybe they don't have a lot of experience in new construction. So let's talk about new construction and some ways that maybe a realtor can understand what maybe they can and can't ask for, or maybe there's some things that they should be asking for, or some things they should be looking out for in new construction.
Sure. So one of the things I've come to realize, you know, I got my license back full time in 2013. So I've been at this a little more than a decade. I originally got my license in 2005 when I was in college. Most people don't know that about me. And that was right when the online MLS was kind of starting to become a thing and starting to get turned on. The brokerage that I was at originally was Van Eaton Romero. It was a local brokerage here in town that were, like, for the longest time, they were the Yankees of, you know, kind of our area.
Right.
And they still had the MLS book, where you walked into the room, you would look through the book and all that. And the MLS was new. So I kind of sort of cut my teeth in college on what it's like to be, you know, basically a realtor. But my family business, we are builders and developers. We do a lot more things now too. We, you know, we do rental developments. We have some in Texas, some across the state, in Louisiana and Lake Charles, that we've built and sold. We own a restaurant, like, you know, just all kinds of crazy things. But we started out as builders and developers. So, you know, if anybody here works in a family business, you know that anytime you have a family gathering or a get together, you talk about your family business, like, especially with my family, like, that's all they want to talk about. So, you're learning it whether or not you want to. So in 2005, you know, I got my license and I worked for a very well-known realtor here for a while. I was basically their flyer person. Like anything, task that they didn't want to do,
right.
I had to do. And then because we didn't have the tools that we have now, the AuthentiSigns and the text messages and stuff like that, I had to stop doing that. I had to put my license to the side to finish school. During the meantime, we were still developing. I was still working for the family business to make some extra money. I was also waiting tables. But even during all this time, I was still learning about building and developing and all that, because it's just all we talked about. When I graduated college, it was in the midst of the housing crisis. I graduated college in 2010. Our company was struggling. We had all these developments that we couldn't pay the notes on. My stepdad, who's the head of the company, had this very famous meeting with his bank where he brought all the keys to his houses and set them on the table and was like, here, you either have to let me short sell these houses or here's the keys. You can just have them back.
Nice.
And of course, they didn't want the keys, so they let him short sell the stuff. So we were able to stay afloat. And then I did some other things for the next couple of years. And then in 2013, I came back like full time. And my business since then has been mostly new construction. And new construction is a different beast. There's a lot of agents that I've talked to that have been selling real estate for decades that don't have any experience or very little experience in new construction. And it shows. It's a totally different process from beginning to end. Like, you know, even writing the contract is a little different because you have to factor in for this house that's not done, that's being completed. And if your client wants to make changes or make some upgrades, which happens all the time, you need to know how to do that and how to factor that in and all your paperwork and things like that. And then there's punch lists, and then there's floating closing dates, and then there's additional deposits for upgrades, and you know, all these different things that are just not typical of a typical sale, which would be write a contract, collect a deposit, do an inspection, do an appraisal, do a final walkthrough, and then close. You know, it's a lot more complicated than that. It's important to, you know, if you don't have a lot of experience in it, find an agent that does. If you know, you're in a deal that is new, because they can really show you some things and it can save your client like a lot of headache. It can save your client, you know, a lot of post-close issues and things like that if you know how to navigate it properly. And you can also, if you know how to, you know, work with a builder, you can also get value for them in certain ways by knowing how to ask for things. Builders will prefer, if you're negotiating and your client wants things, there are things that builders would prefer to give you, you know, than other things. We can get into that.
Yeah.
Here.
What would that look like? What would be something that a builder might be more friendly to provide?
Sure. Depending on when you come in to the house, like, you know, if you put a contract on a house that's just framed up or is, you know, just has sheetrock in it, builders love to give like amenities and things. Like they love to do upgrades on stuff because it's a win-win. Like I love to suggest that even to my buyers when I get them, because like when you look at how much an upgrade will cost, it's a win-win. So let's say you pick an upgrade that would cost normally $10,000. Well, typically a builder will have a sub that will do it for less than that, or they'll have the material already or something like that. And it will only cost them, like, I'm just throwing random numbers out there, like it only cost them $5,000. Okay. But you will be getting $10,000 worth of value on that. So you'll get full value. You won't have to worry about it after. And the builder wins because, you know, it only costs them X. So they love to do that kind of stuff. You know, builders typically don't like to lower their sale prices. Builders are always worried about comps. They want to make sure they're building within the realms of the neighborhood. A builder never wants to be the builder that lowers the comps in the neighborhood. So they're worried about that. They like to give closing costs if they can. And to which, you know, they'll just say, look, just take this closing cost and use it however you see fit. If you want to buy points, you can buy points. If you want to use it on some upgrades, you can. You know, they're typically are very flexible, unless you're dealing with like a national builder, like a DSLD or a D.R. Horton. They have systems that they do, and they have things that they say yes to and things that they say no to pretty much every time. We're more of a family business, so we're pretty laid back operation. So if you want some things, we'll price it for you. And you can use those closing costs kind of as you see fit. But, you know, I always recommend, like, hey, if you have, like, you know, if you're wanting either a price cut or if you're wanting some closing costs or if you're wanting some stuff, I always recommend like get the stuff first because you can get more value there and then take it in closing costs. And then, you know, if that's not enough, then ask for a price cut because you're more apt to get more value in the things that you're asking for as far as like upgrades and amenities. You're more apt to get that and more of it than just like a straight up price cut or closing cost deal.
Yeah. And one thing I'd like to tell buyers too is that a builder, when they take that price cut, they're not likely to take that price cut because it's going to punish them times 100.
Yes.
You know, on the next 100 houses, they're going to have to build on that price that they gave you. So it's not just you, them not wanting to do that deal with you at that price. Is they're saying, okay, well, if I do that price for you and then I lower my price per square foot, that could hurt me times the next 50 houses I build in that same
city. There's that. And then the other thing too is, you know, if a neighborhood's halfway done, you know, you have other people who have purchased from you at a certain price. So, you know, we try to keep them in mind as far as if we start lowering purchase prices, then it hurts our previous clients. It brings the comps in the neighborhood down. So, you know, our clients, we like to protect them as much as we can, you know, to keep their investment as a good investment. And that's one of the things that we can do, especially in a neighborhood where we do all the builds. You know, we typically like to do price drops, like kind of just as a last resort. So I always, again, I recommend, I'm like, hey, look, if you want like a vinyl plank floor upgrade, or if you want some better appliances, like ask for that, cause you'll get more value, that way, like dollars to donuts, you'll get more value than just asking like for a price cut.
Gotcha. No, that makes sense too. And you know what I'm seeing a lot of these national builders doing too, or these, we talk about DSLD or D.R. Horton, or, you know, I guess in different areas, there's different types of builders, these national builders, KB Homes or whatever. There's all kinds of different ones. But what I'm seeing them doing, at least when their interest rates were a little bit higher, they've started to drop now, which is great, but they were really buying down their interest rates.
Yes.
And when the rates were really high, I was like, I couldn't believe the prices that they were paying to buy these interest rates. And I don't know if it's true or not, but I've heard they were buying them down to the tune of like 25 grand a house. I was like, those numbers, I was like, that, I don't know if that makes sense or not. But
well, so the big builders, typically they have their own financing branch, like they own their own banks essentially. So a lot of times what they did was they purchased a lot of money at a certain percentage. So if they purchased, you know, a ton of money to lend out at, you know, 6%, you know, they're buying points from themselves in gotcha. Essence, kind of. So it doesn't cost them as much as like we think it would. Like we could never do it. Like right. Buying down to the same percentage that they do would cost us, you know, just an insane amount of money. So, you know, we can't really, local businesses and local builders can't really compete with those big track builders because, you know, they not only build the houses, but they will loan you the money and they will give you good incentives to use them. So they make their money back that way, you know, and they have their own title company. So they make that money too. And you'll notice they'll like, you know, they'll give you like a pretty big incentive to use their lender and their title company, which, you know, frankly is smart to do. It's a good deal. I just closed a DSLD house with a friend of mine, a musician friend of mine. And, you know, I couldn't tell him to use a different lender or a different closing attorney because he'd be costing himself money. Like it was just straight up a good deal. I was like, hey, you should do this. But you know, they have other avenues to make all those discounts back, like on the houses where, you know, a local builder won't. We just build the houses and possibly develop the land. Like there's only a handful of actual developers here that, you know, own the lots and the houses too. We're one of them. That's tough to compete with.
And in what ways are you separating yourself? Like as a local builder, and you have more of an inside track on that thing, but like as a local builder, local guy that's been here in Acadiana, how do you compete with those guys?
Like, yeah. So really the first thing is, you know, and it's kind of the easiest answer, but McLean Homes has been around for going on 25 years now. And we have a reputation in town of being a good builder, of being a good developer. So just that, like, will make people gravitate toward us if we can. Now, we build everything. I have a neighborhood where my houses are $235,000, and I have a neighborhood where the houses are $2 million. So we have a wide range of products we can build. The big builders, they build, like, that one thing.
Right.
And that's what they build.
Affordable housing.
Right. Yeah. They build, you know, we use the term track housing. I don't really like to use that because it's the connotation of it is cheap. And I think different builders' products will vary, and you'll see that when you walk them, depending. So I don't think track housing is like a fair term to use, but they will build like in clusters. So their purchasing power is a lot better than us. They buy, you know, they're able to buy things for cheaper than us.
And then they're putting the same sinks and the same, you know, light fixtures and all these too, whereas you guys are going more custom.
Too. We're so more buying custom. Yeah.
Like 1,000 dining room fixtures and you're buying, right.
you get 1,000 ceiling fans. Yeah. With us, like a buyer will have a lot more agency as to what they can put in their house, what they want to upgrade and things like that. And you know, it's a lot is to be said for somebody being local and accessible. You know, we're a small company. My two brothers are project managers for our company. So, you know, if anyone's ever having an issue or something like that, we're easy to get in touch with and we're easy to work with. So, you know, if somebody wants to build a certain thing and lower their costs and put lesser finishes in it, we can do that. Or if they want to spend extra money on some things, we can do that. It's just a lot more flexibility on what we're doing. And, you know, we can build pretty much anywhere. If somebody wants to build a house in a development that we didn't do, we can do that. You know, if somebody wants to, you know, build a, you know, a big house in you know, like a prominent neighborhood here, we can do that. We're like everywhere. But, you know, it's the kind of sort of custom route that we go that sort of makes us more alluring than like these bigger companies. You know, we can't compete with these bigger companies as far as like putting specs down. You know, no local builder can. But so we've had to kind of go the other route. And that's really the other route is how we started. We started as a sort of higher end custom home builder. And we just recently got into, you know, more affordably priced things. But we started building like, we did this program called the Acadiana Symphony Show Home that we did for, you know, 5 or 6 years where we would build a house and we would get decorators and designers and architects to come in and, you know, take parts of the house and decorate them. And we would feature them. And they were like these big, we got a lot of custom work from that. And more recently we stopped doing that. And we've been building the St. Jude Dream Homes, for, coming up on 14 years, I think. So, you know, that's a good way to showcase like what we can do. We get some custom work for that. I remember one time we did one, we built the St. Jude Dream Home like 4 times that year because people kept coming through it and they wanted right. us to build it. So
you built the same exact house.
They built the same exact house. They maybe changed some finishes and stuff like that in it, but they built the same exact house, like just kind of peppered all over town.
Gotcha. Interesting.
But yeah. So, you know, we've been really a custom home builder for that period of time and a developer. We're doing a little more developing now, but you know, we would go in, develop a neighborhood, and we would partner with other builders that we love here and finish out the neighborhoods. And, you know, we were building houses that were people's, you know, like not say last house, but you know, the house that they've always dreamed of. Like that's kind of, that was our deal. So it's a totally different beast.
So you try to stay, I guess, kind of out of the lane of those big monsters as far as like,
yeah,
you know, like trying to compete with them dollar for dollar on the building, the cheap first time home buyer house.
Yeah, we just can't. So the product that we have that's priced in the same price point as theirs, it's, you know, it's a small kind of cottage looking house. You know, the square footage is right under 1300. But you know, the neighborhood is gated.
Yeah,
we offer an HOA that cuts your grass, does your flower beds for you, pressure washes your house. So we've had to, because we can't compete like on the actual structure, we've had to be creative and add some other things to like give it value. And what's ended up happening on those particular neighborhoods is I have a lot of either single people or like older buyers in there because they love the HOA structure. They don't have to touch their outside.
Yeah.
But so they want a house. They don't want to rent and they don't want an apartment. They want a house.
Yeah.
But, you know,
they want to be close to their family members who live in the same area.
Yeah, right around there. They love that it's gated. They love that it's small. And they love that everybody's yards and flower beds are taken care of. You won't have a ratty house in the neighborhood. You won't have a neighbor that doesn't keep their grass up. Like, you know, so we've had to add value in certain ways creatively that, you know, you have to think a lot harder when you're a small business and you can't just, you know, being able to buy everything cheaper would be a lot easier, but we can't do that. We don't have that luxury. We can't drop 20 slabs at a time. We're just not that kind of company.
Gotcha. Yeah, that's interesting. And I actually have seen, and I really like that y'all's developments and we might even could find some pictures of it, but like, I really like those small developments too that y'all did for like rental purposes too. And it was the same concept, right? It was smaller houses,
it's
smaller
lots. It's the same concept. Yeah, we did.
But y'all rented it out as a whole subdivision, the whole, y'all rented the whole subdivision out, and then you sold that package a large investor.
That's right. That's, you know, that's not a part of the business that I'm super involved in. But you know, I know a lot about it just because, like I said earlier, you know, anytime I am around my family, all they're talking about is that kind of stuff. So, you know, I even know a lot about the menu on the of the restaurant. So, like, right. we were naming drinks on the flight home. I went to Memphis this weekend. We were on the flight home. We were trying to name drinks, cocktails. So, you know, it's – yeah, we in the end, like, we kind of just have to be a lot more creative and, you know – not to say that the big companies don't have good service, because they do. And the experience I just had with one of the big builders, you know, they did have great service, but we've had to be creative and do some other things to kind of separate ourselves. And really the work we've done over the last 20 years to sort of build a name and a brand here in town has been like invaluable. And the St. Jude Dream Home, I think for us is like,
yeah, that's your showcase.
It's the big thing that we do every year. I'm not sure that we're ever not going to do it. I think we're going to be building that house here for as long as we can stand it. I mean, as long as we can do it. But because St. Jude's been good to us, and you know, building that project has been good to us. It's been a kind of a, you know, a sort of payback for us. You know, karma or whatever. I think that being involved in that project has paid us off tenfold.
Nice.
For that. But yeah, you know, it's kind of going back to what you were saying earlier about, like, you know, dealing with builders and stuff like that. I can tell you that we, you know, we love working with agents, you know, especially, you know, agents that have some new construction experience. And you can tell because they know how to ask for things, and they know, you know, they know how to finance things, and you know, they sort of understand construction timelines and stuff like that. But there's a lot that don't. And I would say that, like, you know, if you're doing a new construction deal, like, lean on the listing agent some. Like, if you have a buyer and you have a lot of experience, like, lean on the listing agent and just ask them. Like, a lot of times they'll tell you, like, I like to be open and upfront with buyers, because at the end of the day, like, they're buying one of my family company's houses.
Right.
So I want them to be happy whether or not they're my client.
Yeah, like, absolutely.
You know, I want them to move in and be happy with their product, because, you know, it has to be pretty good for people to be satisfied. But, you know, if they're not, they'll tell everybody they know.
Right.
So, yeah. You know, we want to make sure that.
Right. It can't be bad.
Yeah, it can't be bad. Like, it's
even if you don't have control over it.
That's,
you know,
right. We want our buyer. People say, yeah, like, you know, even if you have an issue, like, we will do our best to fix it, because, you know, houses are built by hand. They're not perfect. Like,
yeah,
you know, even the track style houses, they're all built by hand.
Yeah. And so, look, I think new construction is amazing. It's an amazing opportunity right now. And I've just recently started selling kind of more new construction lately. It seems like more than I had in the past. And new construction is like in our market right now in 2024, like, that is a really good opportunity for agents to get involved in. Like, do open houses at these new construction homes, meet these buyers, you know, call somebody like Cody and say, hey, can I do an open house at your brand new home?
I,
like,
get that all the time.
That's a great opportunity. Because why is that? Especially with the NAR lawsuit and everything else right now, you know, you're going to get taken care of when you deal with a particular builder.
Sure.
That's the nice part. And in some cases, they even have these tiered systems, you know, like, I just, you know, went under contract on another property with another local builder, and it's kind of like a large local, but they have a tiered system where, yeah, it's like first commission is 2.5, second is 2.5 plus 1,000, third is 3.5. So it's like it's gradually getting better for me, and I know that I don't have to go in and negotiate my commission. If, yeah, I do that deal with McLean Homes, you know, that realtor's going to get taken care of,
yeah,
which that's the nice part about this whole thing is, you know, you're showing all these properties. And for me, like, I'm not necessarily calling every one of these agents that I'm showing these properties. I'm not necessarily calling all these listing agents and saying, hey, are you offering a compensation? Because that is a little bit of a noob move or whatever. You,
yeah,
know,
that's a strange, that, that's, you know, a strange thing that's, yeah, going to create.
So what are you not going to show the house? But anyway, so, like, I guess what I'm saying is new construction is a really good option right now for realtors who are working with buyers, is try to get those buyers that are really looking at new construction, because that is almost a guaranteed,
yeah,
you know, you're going to have a commission,
yeah,
or compensation.
It's nearly a certainty that you're going to get paid.
Yeah, which is nice, especially because, yeah, you know, you go spend all this time with these buyers, and, yeah, you may have a buyer's agency thing signed with them that they've agreed to pay you or whatever. But when it comes down to it, if there's a perfect house, right, like, I mean, for me, I'm going to do what I can to to not make to make sure my buyer doesn't isn't on the hook for a commission.
Yeah.
So like that's just me personally. I don't know how most agents are handling it, but for me personally, I don't want them to have to come out of pocket at all ever for my services. But another angle that I found the other day with new construction, which I thought was like really amazing, especially for us here locally, is in Acadiana and Louisiana. We're in South Louisiana, so we have kind of an issue with insurance right now. And I know there are other states right
small
now.
Small issue.
A small, tiny
just
issue.
Just a tiny issue.
Which, you know, to me is probably the biggest issue that we have hurting our market right now is insurance costs. And the other day I did a closing and I hadn't seen insurance this low in a long time. It was on a $250,000 house, $1,000 a year in insurance,
that
homeowner's
is
insurance. So that's back to like a couple years ago pricing. And even the one of the other ones I did was, you know, $1,500, $1,600 a year. And comparable, like when you compare a $350,000 new construction home versus a $350,000, you know, older existing home with an older roof or whatever, that insurance cost might be double.
It might.
So you're talking
about
the same, right? The same cost, the same purchase price, same down payment, same everything, same interest rate. Your cost just for insurance may be double.
Yeah.
Maybe several hundred dollars more a month.
Yeah.
So that's another incentive that I really like about new construction is the sense of, hey, that insurance cost is pretty cheap. And they're also some builders are also like you said, incentivizing. They're helping either buy that interest rate down, or maybe you use their particular lender and you get a cheaper cost on an interest rate.
Yeah.
And then you're maybe getting closing costs and you're getting upgrades.
Yeah, but your closing costs will cover your prepaids, which one of your prepaids is your first year of insurance.
Yeah.
So, it can cover that. And, you know, the other thing too that is important to think about, especially if you live in an area that has a lot of flood zones, is, you know, builders will, I mean, I can tell you, we don't do it. I can't speak for every other builder, but we never will build a house that is
in a flood zone.
The land itself might be a flood zone just because this is Louisiana and, you know, half of the lower half of the state is in a flood zone. We have flood zone veins running everywhere on the FEMA maps. But we will always build the houses and the structures up out of the flood zone and obtain a LOMA letter. Was it letter of map amendment?
Right.
Stating that the house is not in there. So you'll be playing, you know, if you want to buy flood insurance, you'll be paying the base rate. So, you know, a lot of other houses are not like that, especially in older developments and things like that. Like, you know, they may not meet base flood,
right?
Or they may have met base flood in the 90s, but since the FEMA maps have changed, now it's in a flood zone. So you know, your flood insurance rate is crazy high. You know, we know it's much harder to sell things that are not elevated out of the base flood zone. So we just won't do it. So you don't have, that's another cost that you won't have, another yearly cost that you won't have. You can buy it if you want to, you know, and it's probably a good idea to do it. But the fact that it's just optional will go a long way. And if you do want to buy it, it's the base. You know, Jamie and I, we hear stories all the time about people who are listing their houses that are not new that got moved into the flood zone and they're almost impossible to sell.
Yeah.
Because the flood insurance rate is so high. It is, in some cases, it's more than what the mortgage is on the house.
That's insane. And, you know, you feel for those people. And I don't wish that on anybody. It's just terrible when that happens.
Yeah.
But it's a reality of that's the new value of their house. And I mean, I've even seen properties where, I mean, I have friends that they bought a house and, you know, it wasn't in a flood zone. And then all of a sudden now it's in a flood zone. And then it flooded in the big flood of 2016. And then now the flood insurance is like $9,000 a year.
Yeah.
I'm like, that is like crazy. It's almost $900 a month to think about flood, just for flood insurance. And
just
if you
insurance.
Have a mortgage, you have to pay that rate. So it's like, it's insane. So what does that do to the value of that house? That really hurts the value of that house because that new buyer is going to have to come through and pay that $9,000 a year along with their mortgage and everything else and extra insurance. That's going to really hurt the value of people's houses. So I'm always cautious about flood zones and whatnot. So that's one side note of new construction is I would say 99% of these new construction homes are not in a flood zone, or if they are in a flood zone, they have this LOMA letter, which takes them out of a flood zone. So that's another plus of new construction. So I think if buyer's agents right now are not highly, you know, looking strongly or recommending their buyers look hard at new construction, I think that they should.
Yeah. Well, you know, for the longest time, resales were always a better deal. than new construction. And we kind of looked at it as like, well, you know, new construction is new and you get to do what you want to the house. And you know, if you want a new house, you'll be paying a premium for it. A resale will be better. But it's almost kind of balanced out now where it's, you know, I have this saying like six one way, half a dozen the other.
Right.
Like, you know, it's kind of like a player's choice. But you do, you know, there are these massive benefits to buying new. You know, even, you know, if you get into a neighborhood early and the neighborhood builds up around you, you know, typically you're buying cheaper at the beginning of a neighborhood's life cycle than at the end. So you typically tend to do well in your investment. It's not every case, but, you know, in a lot of cases, that's the case. You know, a lot of times if you buy a resale, you're buying something that's, you know, at the peak of its value and then going down. So, you know, you also have some calculation to do on that. And that has to do with your builder and the location and the kind of neighborhood it is and all that. But it is a factor. You know, it's something that can be added in. So, you know, there's a lot of benefits to it. But, you know, I would say like if get up to date on it, or like, you know, maybe, you know, if your brokerage does meetings, like have an agent that could come in, or if you have an agent there, like have them do a presentation on like a kind of a new construction 101. Like what is your responsibilities as an agent and what do you need to be looking for on these new construction things? Because it is so different. Like, you know, I have a ton of agents that bring clients that don't know how to do punch lists. Like I have to go instruct them how to do it. And still I will go walk through myself and, you know, notice a bunch of things. Some of it is just because I'm super experienced in it. I've done hundreds of punch lists on hundreds of houses, and you learn sort of where the most common issues are and, you know, like what's an issue and what's not. But, you know, I basically, like for a punch list, I'll say, look, you know, have some blue paint or tape in your car, like at all times, just like keep it. You get a cosmetic, you know, punch list walkthrough where you can mark paint touch-ups and things like that. But you know, kind of do what an inspector does. Like if you watch what an inspector does when they go through a house, they open all the cabinet doors, they turn the sinks on, they flush the toilets, mm-hmm. you know, they turn the bathtubs on, they go up in the attic and just kind of take a look around. Like nobody's expecting you to be an inspector, but you know, you'll catch some things. A drawer sticking here, you know, this light won't come on here, you have, oh, this drain stopper isn't holding water, like the builder needs to fix that. And a lot of times you have a specific amount of time to turn that in to the builder, and if you miss it, it's missed. Right. Now a builder does have to issue a warranty, you know, at least in the state of Louisiana. If you're listening to this somewhere else, you need to consult your own, you know, state laws regarding warranty. But in Louisiana, we're required, the builders required to cover certain things, you know, in certain amounts of time. And, you know, buyers need to be educated on that kind of stuff. And I have like a whole little spiel that I go through to make sure that they claim their warranty claims and don't miss them, because it can potentially be thousands of dollars, especially on like HVAC equipment and plumbing and, you know, things like that. Especially like, you know, framing, like you have a certain amount of time. Like if you have a wall that starts to buckle, like that's covered, you know, under your warranty. But you know, your buyers need to be educated on that kind of stuff. And if you don't have any experience to do it, you just don't know to educate them on it. It's not like anybody's doing a bad job or anything, but you can't tell them what you don't know.
Right.
So you need to be educated on that. And it doesn't apply to resale houses. There's no warranty on those. They're as is.
Right.
You know, you hire an inspector and they say, oh, you got roof leak here and this window leaks and this thing, and you have that fixed. And then when you buy the house, it's as is. There's no warranty on it. So yeah. You buy it on a Monday, and on a Wednesday, you have a storm and the window blows out and you have a leak. You know, or the window has a leak, like a defect. You have no recourse on that, but you know, new construction, you do.
Yeah, for sure. And I'm always recommending home inspections on new construction. I don't know if everybody does, but I'm always recommending new home inspections.
I can tell you just from personal experience over the last 10 years, most buyers don't. You know,
that's crazy that they go into it without that. Because I mean, for me, like I always recommend that, and I almost on every single home inspection with a new construction, there's almost always something saying like, okay, the AC's not balanced right, or there's something that's not right. And I think it's worth the couple $100 to go through and know that you've got the peace of mind.
Yeah.
And you know, you do get a warranty, but like, who's to say you even recognize it until you go to sell the house in 5-10 years or whatever.
Yeah. You know, I always, you know, if I get a buyer, kind of the way I do it is I'm like, look, you're entitled to an inspection. You know, I always kind of know about how much it'll cost on my houses because my houses are kind of like, you know, all the same on size. And I say, look, it costs this. Like, you know, you can do it, you know, or you cannot. It's your choice. Here's what you get if you do it. Here's what you don't if you don't. You know, and most of them are like, well, you know, I have a warranty on the house and I get a punch list. And you know, some of it is because they trust me to do their walkthrough. You know, they know. I'm like, look, I'm not an inspector. Like, I'm not going to, you know, I don't have the little temperature gun that I'm going to shoot at the AC. But you'll know 2 weeks after you move in, if your AC is not working, You know, you'll know that, especially here in Louisiana. So, you know, most of them will tend to save the money, but some of them do, you know, do the inspection. And, you know, they will, sometimes they will find things, but usually it's stuff that we're always, like they always, on our houses, they always find the same stuff. Like it's, we know it's the same stuff.
It's usually some tradesperson that just kind of went in quick. And
yeah, or like, you know, a bathroom vent is not plugged up to the exhaust on the roof, like, you know, it's just laying down. So, you know, like, they'll find that kind of stuff. Every once in a while we'll get some kooky things in an inspection report. That, then, you know, one of the things I did learn about inspectors is they don't stay updated on code. So, you know, we as builders, and I say we in the royal sense, like my family business, I'm not the builder, but, you know, builders have to stay updated on what local metro code is, and inspectors don't. I had a long conversation with my favorite inspector about it, and I was like, how up to date on code do you stay? He's like,
not very,
not at all. So, you know, sometimes they will put items on a report that they are saying is defective, but it's actually not defective. It meets code. So I'll have to, you know, go through the whole spiel of, you know, a big one right now is, you know, it used to be code to put a drain line out from your drip pan underneath your AC for condensation. But now what code says is you either have to have a drain line or a float switch. So on our smaller houses, we put a float switch. And so an inspector will come and say, well, you don't have a drain line, because that was when they went to school, that's what was required. And say, well, you don't have a drain line, you need to add a drain line. And we're like, actually, we don't need a drain line. We are up to code. We will build to code unless we get a request from the buyer to do it a different way, but typically they're not gonna. So, you know, it kind of comes with its own issues, but generally it's a good thing. You know, I had one time put on his report that, the AC for the house was too big. You know, we had too much air conditioning on the house,
which I'm like, hey, bring me that AC, baby.
You know, for here. So, you know, and this is something just kind of, I learned so much from talking just to the subs and things like that. They, you know, I was kind of asking them about how this inspection report caused me to visit with him and ask this question. I was like, how do you calculate your tonnage for, you know, the size house? He says, well, it's a ton for every 500 square feet living, like, inside the house. So these houses are 1272. So it's like right in the middle.
Right.
You know,
so it just went bigger.
So we went bigger. He's like, so if we went smaller, if we put the smaller unit on there, you wouldn't have enough AC. So what would you rather have, too much or not enough?
Right. Absolutely.
You know,
but you may have some complaints with the owner when it's 110 degrees outside.
Yeah, like, I don't know about you, but
yeah,
give me it's 105 index outside, I wouldn't mind if my house felt like a refrigerator.
Yeah,
like, you know, so
yeah,
you know, and they, you know, in their defense, they say, well, you know, too large of an AC will come with certain issues. It'll, you know, it might cause some condensation. You know, yada yada yada. But I'll deal with a little condensation if it means I'm not hot. So, you know, there's just like unique things about it like that that always crop up. So, you know, it's, and I'm still learning things. I've been doing it, you know, it's most of my business. I've been doing it over 10 years. And every once in a while, something will come up on a house that I have that, you know, I won't know, or that I'm learning. It's a learning opportunity for me. So, you know, if I'm still learning after doing this for a decade, you know, I can only imagine like a newer agent doing it for the first time, like what they don't know.
Oh yeah. I mean, yeah, it's a massive amount of things that you don't know, when you're a new agent. Not into it, but yeah, dude, I mean, look, easy enough. We definitely can talk for 3 or 4 hours on this thing on a podcast, and we already kind of chatted for almost 40 minutes. So that's crazy. But we're just having a good time and chatting and sharing knowledge, and you've got a ton of knowledge, and you could talk for another 2-3 hours about new construction, I'm sure. And look, I'm getting value from it a lot too, because I'm learning as I go too. And even being in the business like I have for 20 years, I still don't have near the experience that you do as an agent that has so much experience in new construction. So it's just where you have your experience at. But yeah. And I mean, maybe another time we can kind of get into more of your backstory, and some of the first podcasts had a little bit of your backstory and everything else that agents can go back and listen to that one and hear some of that. But yeah, man, I would say, you know, one thing that you really enjoy doing is playing the guitar, right?
Yeah.
So, I'm going to kind of put you on the spot. I know you brought it with us, to the office here. So I'm going to have you, man, kind of play us out if you don't mind.
I certainly don't mind. And you know what? It's, you are a friend of mine. You know, a lot of times I get paid to do it, but I'll do it for free for you.
Well, I appreciate it, man. This is a grassroots effort, dude. We're not making any money off of this thing.
Yeah, we'll do it for free. I'll throw it in as like a little freebie. normally. One time, this is just a little funny story. One time I got paid by my stepdad. He has parties at his house sometimes. And my wife and I were at home and we just had our kid and we were, just kind of hanging out. And it was like midnight. And, my phone rings. He goes, "Hey, you have to come to our house and play." I'm like, "Bro, I'm in my pajamas. I'm not coming over to play. Like, especially like
y'all are drunk."
He goes, no. He's like, "Well, I'll take a pool and we'll put money in the pool." He's like, "Do it then." I was like, "I'll see y'all in 20 minutes."
Yeah.
So I put on my little pants and my boots and I went over there and I played and got paid. So even my stepdad has paid me to play music. I don't really do it for free, but absolutely. I'd love to do it for you.
Yeah, cool, man. Well, yeah, we'll definitely do that. We'll have you play us. Since we a couple podcasts back, we did Bo. We got to put Cody's talent, some of his skills on the podcast. So we'll go ahead and have him play us out.
Maybe me and Bo can do one like eventually.
Yeah, dude. Some guitar competition or something.
Yeah.
A little back and forth.
Yeah, we could just have a jam. There's a lot of songs that have guitars and fiddles, you know?
Sounds good, Cody. I guess play us out, brother.
All right, we'll do.
I hope you find something to love, something to do when you feel like giving up. A song to sing or a tale to tell, something to love, it'll serve you well. I was born in a tiny southern town. I grew up with all my family around. We made music on the porch on Sunday nights. Old men with old guitars smoking Winston lights. Old women harmonizing with the wind. Singing softly to the Savior like a friend. They taught me how to make chords and sing the words. I'm still singing like that great speckled bird. I hope you find something to love, something to do when you feel like giving up. A song to sing or a tale to tell, something to love, it'll serve you well. Tonight we're laying on a blanket in the yard. The wind is cold, the sky is dark, and the ground is hard. But your mama loves to count the stars at night. So if I get a little chill, then it's alright. I hope you find something to love, something to do when you feel like giving up. A song to sing or a tale to tell, something to love, it'll serve you well. You were born on a hot late summer day. Turned you loose and tried to stay out of your way. Don't quite recognize the world that you call home. Just find what makes you happy, boy, and do it till you're gone. I hope you find something to love, something to do when you feel like giving up. A song to sing or a tale to tell, something to love, it'll serve you well. Something to love, it'll serve you well.